Welcome to Campaign Beat, our weekly political analysis program. I'm Sally Mock, and I'm joined by former Capital newspaper reporter Chuck Johnson and by University of Montana political science professor Rob Saldine. And Rob, this week we had two candidates make major announcements. One signed up for re-election and one dropped out. And the candidate who filed for a second term was Attorney General Tim Fox. And he has a pretty good chance of expecting that he will get a second term.
Yeah, absolutely, Sally. I think he's in a really strong position. All indications are that Tim Fox is quite popular around the state and that he's very well known. Being Attorney General, you're in a position where you're going to be weighing in on some of the big controversies that come up. So he's well known around the state.
And he has weighed in on some of the big controversies, and in doing that has adhered to his conservative principles on a lot of issues.
Yeah, that's right, Sally. I'd point to two things in particular. He defended Montana's law against gay marriage. And more recently, he has been at the forefront of challenging the EPA's Clean Power regulations.
He doesn't at this point have a Democratic opponent, and it's getting a bit late in the game for that.
It is, and I think that points to, one, Tim Fox's strength. It's very hard to beat an incumbent just in general. If you only know one thing about a particular campaign and there's an incumbent running, you know who that is, that's a really good person to place your bet on. Incumbents just usually win. The other thing is that the attorney general position is more specific in terms of background and needed qualifications than a lot of other offices. The state constitution requires that candidates have a law degree and that they be members of the bar. So this really limits your pool of talent. And some of the obvious candidates that are out there on the Democratic side who meet those qualifications have chosen to run for other offices. Denise Juneau is running for Congress. Jesse Lazlevich, currently chief counsel for the state auditor, he's running to take over his boss's job, Monica Lindeen, who's term limited out. So it really is a bit of a question. Are there any Democrats out there who are going to jump into this thing?
Pretty safe to say they will come up with someone, though. They're not going to let Tim Fox be unchallenged in the race.
Probably. I still think there's a good chance that they'll find someone, but I don't think it's beyond plausibility that he could run uncontested.
You know, it's interesting because we've had a history of the last three attorneys general all ran for the office the first time and lost. Mike McGrath did to Mark Roscoe, Steve Bullock did to Mike McGrath, and Tim Fox did to Steve Bullock. So sometimes running and losing, it gives you a heads up or a leg up the next election to run for the office. So I'm a little surprised some Democratic attorney isn't running in hopes that he or she might pull that off the next election.
And we should also mention that this is an office that it has been a stepping stone to the gubernatorial office. A lot of people have gone from the Justice Department into being the top leader of the state. Steve Bullock for one, Mark Roscoe for another.
That's correct. Forrest Anderson's another one. The attorney general is really the state office that has the most power and influence of anyone except for the governor. The AG heads up the largest law firm in the state, oversees the highway patrol, the state crime lab. It's really a significant job, and it sort of stuns me that no Democrat would run.
Well, Chuck, the candidate who dropped out this week was Public Service Commission Chairman Brad Johnson, who says he can't devote the time needed to run for governor. And here's what he had to say about that.
We made our assessment last week of where this campaign had evolved to. That's the conclusion that I came up with, was that, yeah, I can probably still win this thing, but it's going to take a full-time commitment, and I just wasn't in a position to do that.
And Chuck, what changed for Brad Johnson was Greg Gianforte's official entry into the race.
That's right. When Brad announced he was going to run last summer, it wasn't 100% clear that Gianforte was going to run.
90%, but not 100%.
Yeah. And, you know, we saw the evidence in the first financial reports through the end of September, and Brad Johnson had only raised about $1,500, and Gianforte had raised something on the order of $255,000 with the promise of lots more to come. Plus, I think the key figures in the Montana Republican Party are definitely behind Gianforte, and so Johnson dropped out. I think that was probably a wise decision on his part. He was just elected to the Public Service Commission in 2014, and he was immediately elected chairman of the commission. So he's got an important job there and, you know, has other times to run for governor. Brad is someone who's run for office many times, lost a number of times, but won a couple of times. He won the PSC seat, and he was Secretary of State from 2005 to 2008. So he's had his chance and may have other chances, but I think it was a decision that was made on in terms of practicalities. He wasn't going to win.
Rob, the economy in the governor's race is a big issue, as always, but this time the issue is more whose narrative about the economy are you going to believe? Governor Steve Bullock's rosy picture or challenger Gianforte's less optimistic version? And here's what the governor has to say about how Montana's economy is doing.
At 4%, our unemployment rate is a point below the national average. More Montanans are at work all across our state than ever before in our state's history. 10,000 jobs were added to our economy in 2015.
That sounds pretty good.
Yeah, what we're seeing, I think, Sally, are dueling narratives about the state of Montana's economy. Gianforte has based his campaign on the premise that the economy is bad and that he can fix it. And Steve Bullock released his report, made those comments, bragging about how strong the economy is and implicitly claiming some credit for it. So what's going on here? Well, I think to a large degree, they're talking about different aspects of the economy that, if you take them together, point to a much more mixed and nuanced picture than either of the candidates really wants to acknowledge. So Gianforte, he's looking at wages, and he keeps saying Montana is 49th in the country when it comes to wages. Now, there are other measurements. The U.S. Census Bureau says per capita household income, we're at 38th. Per capita income, we're at 34th. So those are slightly better, but still not great. So that's Gianforte focusing on the wage issue. Steve Bullock, he wants all the attention to be, as that clip indicated, on Montana's low unemployment rate. And that really is a mark of success, 4%, well ahead of the national average. But what does this all point to at the end of the day? We have a lot of people who are employed, and that's a good thing. But compared to national averages, they aren't making as much. And that's the thing that Gianforte wants to hammer home.
And Gianforte is also making an emotional appeal to all those Montana moms and dads who want their kids to stay home. Here's what he had to say about that.
As I talk to parents all across the Big Sky, they tell me that too many of our young people are leaving to find work. We have to turn this around. Our kids want to stay, but they need a governor who knows how to create high-wage jobs.
And that's a very emotional appeal, really, and one that resonates, I think, with a lot of Montana folks who would hope that their children would be somewhat near them in proximity, I guess.
Yeah, near them in proximity and with the opportunity to have a fulfilling career. And I think what he's especially getting at there are our college graduates who come out with a degree, and their parents expect that with that they're going to be able to have a certain standard of living.
Chuck, Governor Bullock, though, also has a strong argument in that he can point to successes. We're not in the red. There are still some states that have budgets in the red and they have terrible budget problems. Montana does not. And there are more employed now than when he took office.
Yeah, he's got a good case to make on the facts that he cites. You know, we do have a low unemployment rate. I think he said we created 10,000 jobs last year. But the larger question is, what do they pay? Are they low-paying, you know, service-related industry jobs or not? And I recall a former governor had a task force looking at per capita wages. And in 1948, the year I was born, insignificantly.
Oh, significantly.
Montana ranked 10th in the country in per capita wages. And that's the time when the Butte copper mines were employing three shifts of workers a day. The smelter and refinery in Anaconda and Great Falls were going. Timber mills were going all over western Montana. Well, it's been a steady drop since the copper mine closed and the smelter and refinery closed and a lot of the lumber mills closed. So, you know, we have not been at that level in many, many years. And I think that's what Gianforte is trying to say.
He is trying to say that, Rob, isn't he? That's another one of his arguments, is that we need to boost our natural resource industry and get back to, if not that level of being number 10 in the country for income, at least getting higher if we can produce more of those natural resource jobs.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, part of that is getting rid of these pesky regulations, as you would see it. That definitely is a piece of it. I think one thing we haven't heard a lot yet from Gianforte is what exactly are the specifics? I think he has cited it a legitimate problem. What exactly is he going to do about it? He has a better answer for that when it comes to some of those natural resources questions. But when it comes to other aspects of jobs, which I think he's clearly pointing to in some of his comments, it's a little bit less clear what exactly he has in mind. Maybe that will become more apparent as the campaign rolls on.
Finally, Chuck, I want to talk about a statement the chairman of the State Republican Party, Jeff Esman, made this week when he went after the liberal Montana media. And he was especially incensed about an editorial in the Billings Gazette arguing that President Obama's policies aren't the main reason the coal industry in Montana is in trouble.
Yeah, it was a fundraising letter that Jeff Esman sent out. And Jeff is a state representative from Billings, former state senator. And as with most fundraising letters in politics, it was, you know, a lot of purple prose and squarely attacking the Billings Gazette, saying that it's so extreme of an editorial that it appeared as though Sierra Club activists have taken over the editorial board. And I don't think that's the case. I thought the Gazette editorial made some decent points about where coal is in the world right now. I mean, the demand for coal has dropped because of pollution problems. Utilities have built a lot of power generating facilities that use natural gas, which is cheaper and cleaner. And so there are a variety of factors, but the editorial is sort of, let's stick it to the Gazette because they're sticking it to coal. And, you know, that's kind of the nature of these letters. I wouldn't take too much stock in it particularly.
Well, by the end of the campaign season, just about everyone is mad at the media. We can pretty much count on that. You've been listening to Campaign Beat, our weekly political analysis program. I'm your host, Sally Mock, and I've been speaking with former Capitol reporter Chuck Johnson and University of Montana political science professor Rob Saldin. Rob and Chuck, lots to talk about this week. More next week. Talk to you then.
Thanks, Sally.